This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
All right, I think we'll go ahead and get started. Good morning. Wonder how many of you that are in here this morning were in my breakout session yesterday afternoon. Just curious. Okay, so I have half of you. This is actually kind of a continuation, but we're going to go a little bit more in depth this morning, thinking about a reading class. So it's entitled Elements of Fiction, and this is something that I have discovered that a number of teachers kind of know but don't actively teach in the classroom. So I'd like to think about, no matter what curriculum you use or what kind of reader you have for your class, you can easily weave in these terminologies in your reading class. So as a teacher of reading, I hope you use the words that I'm going to suggest this morning as you think about stories, because a lot of your stories are fiction. So before we begin, let's pray. Father, we're thankful this morning that You are the author of our lives. You are the author of this world, and You know about story. You know about setting. You know about the plot that you're writing. You understand style and mood of stories. You know how to bring resolution to stories. So we who are learning about story, I ask that You would open up our mind of understanding and help us to learn and understand these ideas and teach them in ways that reflect something about who You are. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I'm going to begin with a story again. And those of you that were in here yesterday heard me begin with a story. As I read today, I'd like for you to think about just kind of some unusual words that Beatrix Potter uses in her story, The Tale of Peter Rabbit. So on your handout that has the notes, you have some lines there. So maybe with the first slide here, as the slide that I have up here, just jot down some words that you think are creative words that the author used in this story. Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits, and their names were Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter. They lived with their mother in a sandbank underneath the root of a very big fir tree. "Now, my dears," said old Mrs. Rabbit one morning, "you may go into the fields or down the lane, but don't go into Mr. McGregor's garden. Your father had an accident there, and he was put into a pie by Mrs. McGregor. Now run along, and don't get into mischief. I am going out." Then old Mrs. Rabbit took a basket and her umbrella and went through the wood to the baker's. She bought a loaf of brown bread and five currant buns. Currant buns, isn't that a fun term? Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail, who were very good little bunnies, went down the lane to gather blackberries. But Peter, who was very naughty, ran straight away to Mr. McGregor's garden and squeezed under the gate. First, he ate some lettuces and some French beans, and then he ate radishes. And then, feeling rather sick, he went to look for some parsley. But round the end of the cucumber frame, who should he meet but Mr. McGregor? Mr. McGregor was on his hands and knees planting out young cabbages, but he jumped up and ran after Peter, waving a rake and calling out, "Stop, thief!" Peter was most dreadfully frightened. Don't you like that word, dreadfully frightened? He rushed all over the garden, for he had forgotten the way back to the gate. He had lost one of his shoes amongst the cabbages and the other shoe amongst the potatoes. After losing them, he ran on four legs and went faster so that I think he might have got away altogether if he had not unfortunately run into a gooseberry net and got caught by the large buttons on his jacket. It was a blue jacket with brass buttons, quite new. Peter gave himself up for lost, shed big tears, but his sobs were overheard by some friendly sparrows who flew to him in great excitement and implored him to exert himself. I love that line. I use it with my students after I read this, and I go to them and I'll say, I implore you to exert yourself, and they know where that line comes from. Mr. McGregor came up with a sieve, which he intended to pop upon the top of Peter, but Peter wriggled out just in time, leaving his jacket behind him. And rushed into the tool shed, jumped into a can. It would have been a beautiful thing to hide in if it had not had so much water in it. Mr. McGregor was quite sure that Peter was somewhere in the tool shed and perhaps hidden underneath the flower pot. He began to turn them over very carefully, looking under each. Presently, Peter sneezed. Ker-tee-choo! Mr. McGregor was after him in no time and tried to put his foot upon Peter, who jumped out of a window, upsetting three plants. The window was too small for Mr. McGregor, and he was tired of running after Peter. He went back to work. Peter sat down to rest. He was out of breath and trembling with fright, and he had not the least idea which way to go. Also, he was very damp in that can. After a time, he began to wander about, going lippity, lippity, not very fast, looking all around. He found a door in a wall, but it was locked, and there was no room for a fat little rabbit to squeeze underneath. An old mouse was running in and out over the stone doorstep, carrying peas and beans to her family in the wood. Peter asked her the way to the gate, but she had such a large pea in her mouth that she could not answer. She only shook her head at him. Peter began to cry. Then he tried to find his way straight across the garden, but he became more and more puzzled. Presently, he came to a pond where Mr. McGregor filled his water cans. A white cat was staring at some goldfish. She sat very, very still. But now and then, the tip of her tail twitched as if it were alive. Peter thought it best to go away without speaking to her. He had heard about cats from his cousin, little Benjamin Bunny. He went back towards the tool shed, but suddenly, quite close to him, he heard the noise of a hoe. Scritch, scratch, scratch, scritch. Peter scuttered underneath the bushes. But presently, as nothing happened, he came out and climbed upon a wheelbarrow and peeped over. The first thing he saw was Mr. McGregor hoeing onions. His back was turned towards Peter, and beyond him was the gate. Peter got down very quietly off the wheelbarrow, started running as fast as he could go along a straight walk behind some black currant bushes. Mr. McGregor caught sight of him at the corner, but Peter did not care. He slipped underneath the gate and was safe at last in the wood outside the garden. Mr. McGregor hung up the little jacket and the shoes for a scarecrow to frighten the blackbirds. Peter never stopped running or looked behind him till he got home to the big fir tree. He was so tired, he flopped down upon the nice soft sand on the floor of the rabbit hole and shut his eyes. His mother was busy cooking. She wondered what he had done with his clothes. It was the second little jacket and a pair of shoes that Peter had lost in a fortnight. It was a fortnight? 2 weeks, right. I am sorry to say that Peter was not very well during the evening. His mother put him to bed and made some chamomile tea, and she gave a dose of it to Peter. 1 tablespoon to be taken at bedtime. But Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail had bread and milk and blackberries for supper. Elements of fiction. We're going to be looking at 6 elements today. We're going to look at character, plot, point of view, setting, not all in this order necessarily. And then we also will look at style and point of view. I already mentioned that. And then theme. Now, as you think about teaching your reading class, what we're going to do today, I'm going to condense into 50 minutes. So I want you to think about the fact that when you teach each of these elements, you will only take one element at a time and one activity at a time. I'll give you some ideas how to work with certain activities for certain elements. And you certainly want to spend at least a week on one element. As you do the stories, just keep it consistently asking, what is the setting? What is the mood of this setting? What can we learn from this setting? And those, just a couple questions like that, that you can do in addition to your workbooks, if you have reading workbooks. And if you don't have reading workbooks, these can be part of your list of questions that you're going to be asking. Because it is important that we learn how these stories work together, and how, especially when you have stories of fiction, how they need to look at different components of a story. It will help them with comprehension. Again, remember yesterday, those of you that were in my breakout session, I emphasized that fluency and comprehension is the primary goal of reading. And so they can't become very fluent if they don't comprehend, and they can't comprehend unless they become fluent. So we keep working at this, but getting understanding, if they understand what a setting is, what the characters are, who they are, and what they do, it'll help them with questions that you have for discussion or on a worksheet. At any point, if there's something that is not clear to you, don't hesitate to ask questions. We're going to look at an element at a time, do a little bit of an activity, and then we'll move on to the next element. So let's begin with setting. Setting creates mood. It creates emotional responses and is often found in illustrations and text. I'm sorry, I have a word missing here. It should say found in illustrations and text. The combination of place and time gives that general background for characters and a plot to do their literary work. So setting is actually sometimes very crucial to the story, and other times it's just kind of like a backdrop. So you have to determine how important your setting is in the story. Sometimes the setting works as an antagonist to the plot or to the character. You'll have natural forces working against the character or characters. And often it might be based on societal forces as well, working against the protagonist. When I talk about the protagonist, that's the main character in the story. And sometimes it's just based on natural forces as well. I'm sorry, I was clicking, but it wasn't moving. Let me try this again. Okay, let's go back here. I'm looking here. There we go. You have these down now. So if you have a picture book, you also will have the setting will be shown through the pictures, and that's how the illustrations will affect the setting as well. or we'll explain the setting. The setting also provides, at times, a historical background, especially if you have historical fiction. If you're reading a story that happened long ago, the history of that background needs to be, influence the time period and the location. And accuracy is very important in that aspect as well. Quite often, not always, you'll see symbolism, and symbolism is in settings because the setting will kind of maybe foreshadow or foretell something, or will be a symbol of something that the character is in conflict with. So symbolic descriptions can underscore the plot. Often they're found in fantasy stories. Or stories that have animals talking or some personification like that. So think about the garden. That could have been symbolic in a book like Peter Rabbit. Did you notice that when he left the garden, he was safe as at last? Normally we think of a garden and an enclosed garden as being the safest place. But for him, it was not that way. Being out of the garden was where his safe place was. So you can talk about that symbolically. Sometimes you begin a story like the beginning a line of a story can also be symbolic. So, for example, once upon a time in the deep, deep, dark woods, now you're already getting a setting there and a feeling of this symbolic line could indicate there's going to be darkness in the story. So the setting is not, most times an author will not take time to explain the setting and say, this is the setting. You have to pull it out and help students see the setting. So think of setting as time, like what is the time, the time frame? Once upon a time, if the story begins that way, that would be the time. Or maybe it's a historical fiction and you can kind of figure out what era that might have happened. Or it may be the place itself will be the setting. So let's practice a little bit here. And take your sheet that you have, and we'll open up to the first page. Again, I have about three ideas here. I would only use one of these and put it on a full sheet, and don't try to do all three the same day, or maybe you'll just talk about the setting a couple times before you actually give them a worksheet. One of the things that I found very effective is drawing a picture of a setting. That usually helps them think about how to draw. And I really emphasize that I don't want a lot of details. So I go to the board and I do something like this. Students, can you do something like this? Of course. In fifth and sixth grade, they can do that. I said, that's all I want. Just kind of show me. Or if you want to do a dog, you can do something like this. Of course, they laugh at my dog. But it takes the fear out of drawing. And it does help them become creative and visualize. What you're doing, you're giving them a tool to think about imagining and visualizing. Visualizing and imagination also goes with comprehension. And so the more you get them to picture things, that will increase their comprehension. Now, number two is a little bit hefty, but you'll have some students that can do this, or I would probably put them into pairs to work on a short poem, maybe a four-line poem or a song, and they just take a familiar tune and put the tune to the words they wrote. They love doing that. And then 5 to 7 things they saw about the setting of Peter Rabbit. So let's just work on one of these a little bit for a moment or two and choose one of the three and work on it for about 2 minutes here, and just begin thinking about the setting. As I read the story, what would you say would have been this setting? So choose 1, 2, or 3. Just work on it on the paper here, just to help you think about it a little bit. when I give attendees little projects like this, I'm always very conscious that I may be insulting your intelligence. But I want to tell you something. You know, sometimes we give these assignments to students and we think, oh, they should be able to do it. And we don't think about the anxiety level they're feeling. Now, I would like some brave soul or two of you to tell me, what did you feel when you started choosing the three ideas there? What were some of your first thoughts? Thank you.
I was excited to actually
think. Oh, great. She was excited. Okay. Somebody have a different kind of feeling.
The easiest one to do.
Ah, that's what I was hoping I'd hear. We choose the easiest one. How many drew? Okay. Now, turn and tell. Show what you did. Whoa. Now the anxiety is going up to 10, right? Okay, thank you. Any questions about setting? Let's go on to characterization. One of the most powerful literary elements is characterization. Characters need to carry the story alongside the plot. So characters are heavily involved in plot, and it needs to describe more who the person is than his accomplished feat. Like somehow we have to be able to connect with that character. That's a good story writer. If somehow we can identify, we identified with Peter. We know what it's like to be naughty sometimes. So, as you think about presenting the characters, they should be credible characters. They reveal, if a character is credible, it'll reveal the full nature of the character and keeps developing him. In short story, you're not going to have much development in character. We'll talk a little about that in a little bit. But if you're working through a novel, you're going to have lots of opportunities to expand the character and see him developing as the story develops. So an author has to decide what to do. In a short story, they're going to give a direct presentation. And this is known by the author's detailed exposition. And the way they describe the character. They'll just quickly describe the character. You notice that's what Beatrix Potter did. She told us in a very short time who Peter was. He had a blue coat with brass buttons, and he decided to make a decision to be naughty and run right to the garden. So in a couple pages, we knew exactly who Peter was. She didn't take time to develop him fully. So this is a direct presentation. Sometimes they also will just make stated observations, and you notice that. She said, so that I think Peter might have. They'll do that to help you move the story along. Generally not as emotionally appealing. We don't attach ourselves to the character. But then when you have the indirect presentation and the character is shown in action and we learn about the character as time goes on, then we know that we have a character that we begin identifying with, and we think we know him or her, because the character is shown by the action. Two principles about characters is that they are consistent in behavior and thought. So does the character stay consistent within his expected role? So for example, Mr. McGregor will be Mr. McGregor, and he will not change, otherwise he wouldn't be Mr. McGregor, right? He's the man with the hoe that scratches and chases rabbits. That is something we know about him. So he's consistent in who he's supposed to be. he doesn't run away from the rabbit, because that's not who Mr. McGregor is. And then they also have to be plausible or believable, even if they're personified like Peter is. He acts like a human. He's personified as a human, but he's not human. However, he's believable. We know that somewhere there's a Peter Rabbit out there in the world. We just haven't met him, but we know he's there because she's convinced us. So he's a plausible character. In characterization, and these are terms you'll want to use with your students, you have different kinds of characters. The flat character, and that's described in a few traits. For example, Mr. McGregor would be a flat character. We kind of know who he is, and that he just stays that way. A round character you're going to find as a developing character. He's complex, or she's complex, many-sided facets, will develop in some way, and usually not found in a short story. You rarely have a round character. Well, I just don't know that there is, unless it's a very a lengthy short story. But generally, that you'll find in a chapter book. Then you have the stock characters or the stereotype characters, you know, like the Western sheriff or the cowboy or the spinster with a wart on her nose or ideas like that. Peter's mother would be an example of a stock character. Of course she would go to the market. That's who she is. It's just kind of stereotype. A mother does that, right? She does the buying. Now, the static character is very similar to the flat character, but it just extends it one more point. It's the same person at the end of the story as he was at the beginning of the story. So those are kind of interchanged, the flat and the stock character. And then the developing character is also a part of the round character, but Peter could be classified as a developing character. We know a little bit about him. He's undergoing maybe a slight change, and usually they have a permanent change, at least in one aspect. And so we see Peter. Okay, we know he learned one lesson, but we're not quite sure that we could fully trust him to go out the next day, right? So I like to get my students to write, by the way, I'm going to take a little bunny trail, no pun intended, but picture books are for any age group, all right? It's not just for first and second grade. Older students will understand the themes in these stories better than the younger ones will. And so there are some rich themes in picture book stories, so please use picture books in your classroom as well as chapter books. So Peter Rabbit is developing, like I said, but we're not sure that we can trust him. So we're going to look at a couple things. So we're going to do two things for characterization here. And open your sketchbook again, and we're going to work through a few things here together. This is what you call either a bubble map. Some people call it a web, and some people call it a word web. Whenever you want your students to narrate something or to write something, don't just give them the assignment. I want you to write how Peter Rabbit, I want you to write a character summary of Peter Rabbit. Well, they don't know where to start. You always have to give them tools. No matter what grade they're in, you still need to give them tools. So let's start with physical descriptions. What do we know about Peter Rabbit? We'll just do a couple. It could be filled, but we're going to just do a couple so we can move through here. I want one from this side, one from this side, and one from the back. Okay, so one description. Blue jacket. Blue jacket, right. Over on the next side. Shoes. One from the back. What else describes him physically? Physical description. What did he have on his blue jacket?
Brass buttons.
Brass buttons. Okay, and then what would we say were some character traits of his?
Well,
Mischievous. Mischievous.
Yes. Mischievous. What else?
Insatiably curious.
Yes. Very good. I was hoping that would come up. Insatiably curious. Let's move on to adventure. Somebody that hasn't spoken yet. What was one adventure he had?
Going to the garden.
Going to the garden. What else?
Holding a watering can.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Holding the watering can.
Water. Yes, water can. What were some fun words that you wrote down as I was reading? Somebody who hasn't spoken yet.
Twitched.
Wow, that was good. Another one.
Straight away.
Another one.
Lippity.
I heard that one. And what was the other one that was said?
Wriggle.
Good, wriggle. Okay, good. Now, do you see after this would be full, how you could get students to write about Peter? And you could tell them that you could actually even use these as paragraphs if you want to as they get into upper elementary. Physical description, you'd have a paragraph on the character traits and making some associations. Fun words, I wouldn't use that as a paragraph. I would just encourage them to use some of these words within their descriptions of their paragraphs, and then maybe an adventure or two that they write about. And they have tools. You help them think it through. You're also building comprehension as you're writing and as you're discussing some of these things. If you would have a third or fourth grader, I probably just would do one sentence of each and help them because it takes them longer to write. Any questions about the web, the bubble map? And then we have what we call a Venn diagram. Some of you have used this already. And others of you may not have, but you compare you compare and contrast. So we're going to put Peter over on this side and put yourself here. And then this will be same, the things that you share together. So we know Peter is a rabbit and you are a human. What are some other things that might be different?
He used four legs to run.
Four legs to run. And we have two. Good. That's great. We'll stop with that part. Now let's think about what is alike. What are the likenesses we share with Peter?
We wear clothing.
Clothing. Good. Another one.
Curious.
Another one. Children will usually say, they'll think of one word about him. Remember the word naughty? Okay, sometimes we're naughty. So this is another way to think about writing a comparing and contrasting paragraph or talking to each other. Any questions about characterization? All right, let's go on to the next one. And we have plot. So a plot holds the story together and gives meaningful, purposeful ideas to sequential events. It's the major events in the story that move the story forward. I like what Gladys Hunt says. She says that you should not be asking what happened next, but why did it happen? And that propels the story forward. So here are some things that you have to think about in relation to plot. Again, think about taking your short story. Every short story, if it's a good story, will have a good plot. It'll be a short plot, but it'll be there and move your story forward, and also keep you captivated by the story. So it should have a strong beginning. It should pull the reader in right away. Especially for the short stories. And then, of course, there are the sequence of events that lures the reader to keep on reading. You wonder what's going to happen. And always in a short story, you have a recognizable climax, or you should have. It should be the highest point of the story and should be near the end of the story as well. And then always there should be an appropriate resolution. Now, like I said earlier, a character will be highly involved in plot. So along with that, we often talk, when we discuss plot, you should discuss these two terms: the protagonist as being the central character in conflict. He's the central character in conflict. So it could even be the naughty person, right? So Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail were good little bunnies. So it doesn't just mean that a protagonist is good, but they could also be a character that is a lesser worthy admiration. And then you have the antagonist, and these are the forces that are arrayed against the protagonist. It might be another character, it might be the setting of the story, and we're going to look at this in the next slide. So remember, the plot holds the story together, gives meaning to purposeful sequential events, and the characters in conflict, you will have person against person. So think about the tale of Peter Rabbit. Who's the person that is against Peter Rabbit? Call it out.
Mr. McGregor.
Then you have person against society. This is a little bit more hidden, but you actually have society working against him as well, because none of the animals were very helpful at all. The sparrows implored him to exert himself, but they weren't helping him. They just said, try harder. And the little mouse with a pea in her mouth couldn't help him at all. And, or it wasn't a mouse, what was it? Is it a mouse? Okay. All of a sudden I'm blanking out on that. And there was one more. Oh, the cat. The cat was not helpful at all. So the society was working against him. And then you have person against nature. Can you think of the three things that were in the garden that he got entangled with? The net. Mm-hmm. What else? The water can. And then there was, I guess the other one didn't entangle him, but it was a hindrance to him. He couldn't find the gate, right? So you have person against nature, like the garden itself kind of worked against him. Now, will you have all four, or here's the fourth one then, person against self. Here he's in conflict with himself. He doesn't know, he has to make a choice. Either he's going to obey or not obey. And so he's in conflict, and then as he gets to the garden, he's finding a lot of conflict. He wants out, but he doesn't know the way out. You will not necessarily have all four of these very strongly seen in characters. Often there's a primary one. And so I would say for Peter, it was person against person. That probably was the primary one. These were just, the others were more subtle characters, or were subtle things that were working against him in the conflict he was having. Two more things that will happen with plot. You have the suspense factor. Sometimes there's a mystery that craves some kind of an explanation. Or you have the dilemma. So for Peter, it was a dilemma. He was forced to choose unfavorable options here initially. He tried the water can. That didn't work because he got wet. And so there are other things that propel toward dilemmas instead of mystery. Let's look at the page again for plot. I want to talk about one thing here. You have three ideas here that could be used. Number two, I just want to clarify that geometric shapes such as circles and triangles and rectangles, take that and design a graphic organizer. So when I talk about a graphic organizer, this would be a graphic organizer. The Venn diagram is a graphic organizer. The plot line is a graphic organizer. So it's that idea. So maybe you would take these geometric shapes and use arrows to kind of do the four ideas that I suggested, or five ideas that I suggested on that worksheet. So let's go back to the top and draw a plot line that corresponds with the events in the story of Peter Rabbit. So you have the beginning, you come to a climax, and notice most times they say that the resolution should come all the way down to wherever this line was, but I disagree, because always after having an experience like a character has, he can never go back to the beginning of who he really was, because you now are at another level having learned that experience. So I draw my plot lines a bit more like this. So I just gave you a list of ideas here. Mother's instructions, Peter goes to the garden, chased by Mr. McGregor. I couldn't put everything down. I'm just giving you an idea. Gets caught in the net, loses his way. Here's Ho, sees gate, and then punished and no treat. So what I would do with my students, I just make little dots on the line, and they talk about the plot this way, and then write down just short phrases and write the plot as they see it. If I have a chapter book, I'll do it by the chapter. And sometimes it's not always a neat line going up, because sometimes if you're in a chapter book, it's going to go down because there was really nothing that happened there that propelled it forward to the next thing. But then maybe we rise up again and come back up. But at some point, there's going to be a climax. So when he lost his way, like totally lost his way, he didn't know how he got out, how he would get out. This would be the climax of the story. So that would be number five, should be up here, I guess. Five up here. And then, of course, he starts sliding down. He hears the hoe. Six would be fairly high up here yet. And then at last, he's home and he's safe. And he ends up here. But this works really well in teaching plot and helping students see how the story is moving forward. Any questions on that? Let's move on to theme. Donna Norton wrote, she said, "There is no prescribed method for discovering themes. Sometimes we can best get at it by asking in what way the main character has changed in the course of the story and what, if anything, the character has learned before its end. Sometimes the best approach is to explore the nature of the central conflict and its outcome. Sometimes the title will provide an important clue." So it's the central dominating theme of your story. The term also indicates a message or a moral, moral implicit in any work of art as well. But for our purposes, we'll think about a couple ideas here. So the theme revealed in character, somehow he's changed, or there's personal development that happens. And then the responses to the conflict he's experienced. So that's how the theme is revealed. If you think about the character, you want to focus on that. So what did this character learn? How did this character change? Why did he change? And we work with themes in that way. So you will sometimes if it's a moralistic approach to the story, they're going to be very strong with a theme. So Johnny never lied again. Well, now we know what the theme is. But most often you have generalizations about life. They should not refer to specific characters, events, or places. So when you state the theme, actually the character's name should probably not be in it. Okay, it's what the story taught us as a reader. This will tend to be a bit more difficult for students to pick out initially. But they do eventually to catch on and can give you the idea. So it's based on the data you have and not on assumptions. All right. So don't make the themes bigger than what they are. themes should be expressed in about one sentence, not more than one, two at the very most. I really try to push my students to say the theme in one sentence. And avoid cliches like a stitch in time saves nine, you know, those kinds of proverbs or whatever. It should be something authentic, something they come up with. Your turn. Take your paper. Thinking about theme. There's a couple of things you can do. I quite often just have them write down the theme on a bookmark and design the bookmark then, and we actually cut it out, and or else they just draw it in their notebook that they have. Or another thing you could do is write a journal entry of the theme from this story of Peter Rabbit and how you connect with it. Today I read the story of Peter Rabbit and it reminded me of, okay, and then they can talk about how the theme applied to their life. So what I'd like for you to do is I want you to think about what do you think the theme of this story is and write it on that bookmark. Just give you a moment here. Okay, turn and tell. Give your theme to the person beside you.
Yeah.
Did someone have a partner whom you thought their theme was really well stated? A partner. Did you have a partner that had a very good stated theme? Very well stated theme? Okay. Would you read yours?
Not heeding the warning can result in disastrous.
Very good. Not heeding the warning can result in disastrous
happenings.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to point of view. So this is the way the story is told to us as we read it. Quite often stories are told in third person and by the narrator. And this, when you have the omniscient view, remember, God is omniscient. He sees everything, hears everything, knows everything about everything. So it's kind of that idea. The story is told in third person by the narrator with unlimited knowledge of all the characters. He knows exactly, the author is able to crawl into the character of each person's mind, and we know what each person is thinking. Usually that's kind of a rare book, but on occasion, those that approach is used. More often, it's the limited omniscient view. Either the story told in first person or third person by one character's viewpoint. And major and minor characters are used in that. So that's limited omniscient view. You also have the objective point of view, which records action and conversation, only what is seen in action and heard in conversation, and there are no author comments. And it relies heavily on external action and dialogue. You don't really know what the characters are thinking when you have the objective point of view. So you have the omniscient, limited omniscient, and objective point of view. There would be more, but for our purposes, I don't use these terms quite as much with my students. I talk more about first person and third person, but I do use a lot of the other vocabulary words when I talk about story. So just to show you, let's go to our sheet again for the point of view and style. I just kind of have two things here. In the style of Beatrix Potter, authorship should be apostrophe S. Write a letter to, sorry about the typos there, Mr. McGregor's, oh my, I really messed up on that one. I was working on rewriting it. what I wanted to have written here was that in her style, you're going to write a letter as though Mr. McGregor's writing it to Mrs. McGregor, telling about an ornery Peter Rabbit coming to his garden. So that would be telling the story then from Mr. McGregor's view and how that might change the story and how he would look at the rabbit. We ended up feeling sorry for the rabbit. If he would write about the story, we probably wouldn't feel sorry for the rabbit. We'd see him as a nuisance. Do you see the point there? And then we have one more here. In style, let's think about style just a moment here. We need to keep going here to finish up in time. And style is how words are arranged to appeal to sensory faculties of readers. Style includes figurative language, metaphors, similes, descriptive modifiers, and things like that. Sometimes an author will also use personification as another way of bringing in some style to the story. So it's the way that the author will arrange his wording or her wording. And sometimes there are interactions. Whoa, something happened. Can you go back, Christopher? Just do the update and then just get out of it right away. Just do the update and then, yep. Okay, now just get out of it. There you go. Thank you. Christopher was a student of mine once upon a time, very long ago. All right. The author will interject comments to the reader, which Beatrix Potter did that. Like we followed along, and she helped us understand Peter because of the times that she inserted herself. Like she said, I am sorry to say that Peter was not very well during the evening. The author is inserting herself. So it will include navigating the plot. It will also include some mood to the story. Like you're going to feel something after you're done. If the style is written in such a way that it pulls the reader in, you're going to have some feelings, some strong feelings about it. And that's because of the author's style of writing the story. So, in review, let's see if we can name the elements of fiction as we discussed them in class. A good teacher would have reviewed every one of these each time we got to a new one, but because of time, I didn't take the time to do that. But let's see if we can come up with them as we look at the first letter. So, the first one is setting. Good. Second one?
Characterization.
Third one, plot. Fourth, theme. And the last two are kind of together. The first one with the letter P is point of view. Again, I try to help them think about, I will use the word point of view, but I don't talk about the omniscient or the limited omniscient or the objective point of view. I just talk about the point of view. What point of view is the author taking here? What point of view does, how would this story be written, or how would the story go if the sister of the story would be telling the story instead of the brother? And the last one is style. I think maybe we did do that one. So, in closing here, memorable stories are the result of authors effectively applying the use of fictional elements. This concludes Elements of Fiction. I hope you will become lovers of books and read in class and use some of these terminologies with your students and help them grow in comprehension and help them to grow in fluency as they read and as they learn more about the different components of reading. Those of you that were in my class yesterday, I failed to collect that one paper of Soapbox and Door in the Wall. If you would kindly dispose of that, I did not have, I just made a convenience copy as a teacher. So technically I should have picked those up and thrown them away. So if you want to leave them here or throw them away, that would be great. I also felt like if you want to hold that up, that's the one. You see that, those of you that were in here. So the other thing I want to mention, I thought later, I probably did not encourage you very much when I said that you're going to have many down days. So I apologize about that because the Holy Spirit is with you and God's grace is with you. So I pray that you'll have many up days. I do wish you a good year, and I hope that this week has been helpful. I know a lot of you are new teachers or teachers of just a few years, and it's hard work, and I applaud your decision in becoming teachers and taking that step. Love God, love your children, and love your work. And go with God. You're dismissed.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.